Hi, folks. Bob Main here, and you are listening to another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. I believe the Second Amendment makes all of the other amendments possible. And you've tuned into a practical show. I am not ex-law enforcement or ex-military. I'm not a gunsmith or even a firearms trainer. I'm just a regular guy. And my passion and hobby happens to be firearms. And so I talk to you about the practical owning and shooting of primarily handguns from an everyday guy's point of view. So thanks again for downloading, and let's get started with the show.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Welcome to episode number 88. I bet you've probably noticed this is the second podcast this week. I normally put these out only once a week. However, I'll explain just a minute here as to why I'm doing a second one this week. Thanks for listening to the other one, episode 87, earlier this week on revolvers. Hopefully you enjoyed that. Hopefully you didn't get too irritated by my bad attempt at comedy. Anyway, there's a good chance that I might not put out a podcast next week. Got a really busy work schedule, so that's why I wanted to get two of them out this week for you. I had these already prepared. I wanted to get them out there and get them out in the public domain for you to listen to. So thanks again for downloading. Please make sure you comment, by the way. Let me get a couple of announcements out of the way real quick. The website is handgunworld.com. The YouTube channel, Handgun World Show, if you search that, and then also search Handgun World Show on Facebook. There's a Twitter badge at handgunworld.com, all that good stuff. I'm doing my best I can with all this social media stuff. Also, please remember to join me at the Gun Rights Radio Network forums. If you're not a member, sign up. Go to gunrightsradio.com. Click the forum tab. It'll take you where you need to go. And there's a thread there for all of the other great podcasts that are on the network, as well as mine. And go ahead and please interact with me that way as well. And always, I welcome direct emails at bob@handgunworld.com. So, now that I got that out of the way, this show is going to be another interview. And I've got Steve Zofi, my buddy up in Washington. We're going to finally get a chance to shoot together sometime next year, probably middle of next year. He's coming down here to Texas to shoot a USPSA match, and I think I'm going to join him there. Anyway, he is a USPSA Master Class Shooter, United States Practical Shooting Association, for those of you who might be kind of new to this. And if you recall, we decided to read Brian Enos's book called Practical Shooting Beyond Fundamentals. It is a fantastic book. If you have not read that book, I would strongly recommend get on Amazon or do whatever you have to do to buy it. Practical Shooting Beyond Fundamentals by Brian Enos, E-N-O-S, a very well accomplished competitive shooter. And I'm really enjoying it. So we talk about Chapter 1, which I'm going to call the title of this podcast, Shooter Attitude. Because that's kind of what jumped out at me in that book. He talked about shooter attitude. He talked about concentration and focus and shooting from a position of awareness and the shooting tense and all that. So that's what we're going to talk about. Awareness, focus, shooting tense, shooting attitude, pretty much the mental aspect of this. And you'll hear Steve and I tie this into self-defense a little bit too. So this is not just a podcast on competitive shooting. Now, you know how I feel about competitive shooting sports. I think it's great. I think that anybody who wants to be proficient with a handgun needs to be involved in IDPA or USPSA. Those are the two major clubs out there. And I'll say it again. The reason I believe that you should be involved in one of those two on a regular basis, I would say at least once a month, they really sharpen your gun handling skills, and they give you the opportunity to practice things you can't practice at a square range. And let's face it, folks. Not all of us can afford to plunk down a few hundred dollars every single month to go to an expensive firearms training class. Some of us just don't have the budget for it. I understand that. So IDPA and USPSA is a very inexpensive way to get some good practice with your defensive handgun. You're also probably going to get hooked on it. I'll warn you right up front. It's kind of addicting. It's fun. It's a game. Try not to let the game overtake you. You're going to hear me and Steve Zofi talk a lot about how to perfect the game. And again, we're going to talk about Chapter 1 of that book, and we're going to talk about the mental aspects of improving your game. But we'll tie it into self-defense. Because, after all, isn't that why we really carry our guns so that we can live. So with that said, I'll turn the interview on here in just a minute. Couple of announcements I forgot to make. I'm finally getting a chance to do this once again from home. It's great not to be driving and doing this podcast. I'm almost kind of enjoying this being at home stuff here. But as you know, my job makes me drive around a lot, so a lot of these are dictated from my car, but not today. The other announcement that I want to make, thank you for the overwhelmingly positive response that you folks have been emailing me about bringing on sponsors to the show. I promise you I will not allow sponsors to overtake the show. However, I want to go ahead and announce that I have not made a decision yet or come to a final agreement with anybody yet. So, I still need your support. If you can't support this show some way financially, I do about four of these podcasts a month. So think about it. I do about four a month. On a rare occasion, I'll do five a month. If these shows are worth a couple dollars an episode, if I'm helping you out in some way and it's worth a couple bucks to you, consider donating to the show. There's a buy now button. I'm using Google Checkout. It's real easy. A lot of you did it during the Freedom Raffle. Just maybe consider sending in a $10 donation every couple months or something like that if you're getting some help. However, I'll always keep this podcast for free. But if you find it in your heart to do that, that would be great. That's it. Enough begging from me. I'm not going to make this show all about money. This is not my full-time job. I don't intend it to be and any of that kind of stuff. I just have a blast doing this. It's a lot of fun. So now that I got that out of the way, I want to let you know I'm not going to come back on after the interview. I don't like these shows to drag on too long, and Steve does such a great job on this that there's not much else that I can add. So you'll just hear some music to close out the show when it's all over, and there's a slight chance I might post a podcast next week, but in case I don't, you'll know why. You had two this week, and thanks very much for tuning in. So I'm Bob Main. This is the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Here's a quick 15-second musical break, and don't go away, because interview with Steve Zofi is coming right up. Okay, back with me once again, Steve Zofi. As I mentioned, we're going to try to do this once a month, and we're going to talk about the book Practical Shooting Beyond Fundamentals, Brian Enos. How you doing, Steve?
Pretty good, Bob. How are you?
Good. For those of you that might be new tuning into this show, because it seems like we've got new listeners almost every week, Steve's a masterclass USPSA shooter, and he turned me onto the book Practical Shooting Beyond Fundamentals by Brian Enos, and it is everything that Steve says it is. It's a very complex book. I've managed to muddle my way through the first chapter, which is on awareness and focus. So once a month, we're going to get together on Skype like we're doing now, and we're going to discuss it. You've been dry firing practice today, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I have a match coming up tomorrow. I went out and actually did some range practice yesterday, and then did dry fire practice here for about 45 minutes today, and then I got a match tomorrow. So
that's good to hear. Before we get into the book and talking about Chapter 1, what were you practicing in dry fire practice today?
Typical transitions, a lot of times what I do is engage one target and then shift a very large distance to another one, forcing basically my vision to snap to the next target and then snapping it back, and then also doing reloads and basic stuff like that. But that's one of the things I've really been trying to push recently, is to snap your vision to the target, find the available section or area of the target that you want to hit, and then snapping to another one. And I think that's key in terms of, I think on just general target acquisition is finding the available area of the target that you want to hit. And sometimes that means dropping points or accepting, you know, an IDPA a down one instead of a down zero, but it's better to be, you know, maybe down one than to try to skirt the edge of, let's say, hardcover or, worst case, a no-shooter hostage target and end up hitting that. So,
which I've done plenty of times, more times than I care to admit. So that's cool. Well, real quick, another quick question here about dry fire. Are you using dummy rounds or are you just dry firing with a completely empty gun?
No, I'm using, confession time, I've switched back to my STI again.
So. Uh-oh, you switched back, huh?
Yeah, well, just doing some practice with that. But my goal before was to, like I was saying, is to shoot the Glock for a year, and I actually started this experiment about November of last year or so. I made it very close to a year. I think I'm a month or so shy of when I started last year. But yeah, I kind of thought I wanted to get back to the STI and actually do some experimentation with that, primarily from the standpoint of I got my hands on some Wolf primers that were causing lots of problems in the Glock of not going off. So I decided, well, I'm going to try them out in my STI, and so I kind of switched to that, and then I'm sticking with it. But at any rate, to answer your question directly, no, I actually use a snap cap in the chamber, and then I have a dummy round in the top of the magazine for loading, just so that it doesn't hook or hang or catch or anything like that on the follower. However, on the STI, the magwell and that thing is so huge that you could probably shut your eyes and hit the thing. So
yeah, I can drive my pickup truck inside the magwell if you STI, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. I didn't know that your one-year experiment was almost over. So was it worth it?
Yeah, it definitely was. It's interesting because I accomplished the goal that I wanted to accomplish, and I may have actually affected some other people around here, because one of the guys that I shoot with, who uses a basically tricked out Glock 35 for limited division, has switched over to his Glock 19, and has started shooting that. And I asked him, well, what's up with that? And he said, well, I wanted to basically just get some, more trigger time on my carry gun and shoot it more. So I thought, well, that's exactly what I did. So
as I've mentioned before in this show, you've inspired me to do the same thing. Now I'm only about a little less than 2 months into the 1 year.
And it sounds like you've inspired some other people.
Like I've inspired some other people. Yeah. I love to hear stories about people deciding to get better with their carry gun. I mean, after all, the shooting sports is great. I love it. You love it. Lots of people who listen to this show love the shooting sports. But let's face it, when it comes right down to it, why do we do this?
Yeah, it's all, I mean, the roots of all the shooting sports, or at least practical shooting sports, is defensive use of a handgun. So that's what it all comes down to. And that's why we do it, to become proficient, to stay proficient. Stay accurate, improve our techniques, should we ever need that in a life and death situation.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's talk about Chapter 1. Great book. Once again, everybody, if you don't have Practical Shooting Beyond Fundamentals by Brian Enos, this is the first time that Steve and I are going to take a crack at this, but you need to get this book. You need to read it. It is very complex. As I promised in previous shows, we're not going to go through every single chapter. We'll be doing this for the next 3 years if we do that. This book is so intense. There is absolutely – besides that, I think people would probably get kind of bored just listening to us go through this point by point. But
right.
Let me start off by saying – oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, however, if you keep it on a high level without getting too buried in the details, I think the way you need to look at the book. However, I agree. There's a lot of stuff in there, and especially the chapter one is probably the most – if I remember right, it's been years since I've read this thing, but probably the most mentally intensive chapter out of the book. And a lot of people just have difficulty understanding the mental aspects of a lot of this stuff. I mean, we all want to look at it from the mechanics, because we understand the mechanics. But when you start shifting things to the mental, the mental part is a part of the brain that a lot of people have trouble understanding or dealing with from that standpoint.
I have a hard time understanding my brain too, so I can relate to that. No, sorry to interrupt you there, Steve. Let me begin by letting everybody know that the name of this name of the first chapter is Awareness and Focus. And what I want you to comment on, Steve, is I love the way that Brian opens this chapter. He starts by saying, and this is what jumped out at me. I mean, when I read the first sentence of this book, as soon as I read the first sentence, I'm like, okay, this is good stuff. He starts off by saying, I begin this book with what might be thought of as an advanced topic, the shooter's attitude. And I think that's, and you know what, when I first saw that, shooter's attitude, I thought, what does he mean? So I kept on reading, but I think that's what I'm going to title this podcast. I'm going to title this Shooter's Attitude. What do you take away? How did you read that point, Steve?
Well, the attitude thing is really in my mind of what the shooter seeks to get out of shooting, and the approaches that they're willing to take to do that. Mm-hmm. Some people I think will become somewhat, they're satisfied with the way they're shooting, And that's okay with them, and they aren't looking to improve anything beyond that. You know, it's working for them. They shoot, they hit the target. You know, it's acceptable, and that's all there is. But I think it's kind of like, in terms of attitude, is what you strive to dig deeper, or really find if there is a better way of doing things, or a more efficient way of doing things, just, you know, a different way of looking at things. And that's, to me, it's just like, you know, your attitude towards shooting. I mean, some people take it very, you know, don't put a lot of emphasis in it, don't really care.
Right.
And that's fine. And other people are really, you know, trying to be more analytical and try to dig deeper into, you know, how to possibly do things better.
Yeah. And, you know, Brian talks about two real important things in this chapter, awareness and focus. And I want to get to awareness and focus in a minute. But what I thought was interesting is he goes on to say that attitude is typically something that people save for last. But he chose to make it first because he said for him, that's the most important thing to master. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do. I really do. Brian is, I think I kind of had the same trait, but Brian is very analytical in what he does, and the way he approaches shooting. He, from discussions or interviews that I've heard with him before, is that he really tends to analyze things from a mental standpoint and also from a physical standpoint of what shooting is all about and what makes it tick. And I tend to do somewhat the same thing. Coming from an engineering background where everything is a problem-solving exercise, seemingly, and you have to analyze everything. So I kind of take the same approach on things. This is all really, you know, you try to look at everything as well as you can and study it, and then try different experiments to see, you know, what may, you know, solve the problem or maybe what may make things better.
Yeah. So let's focus in on awareness then.
Right.
That's he talks about awareness. Now, what I like when he says is that awareness is basically observing things that are happening while you're shooting at the instant that they're happening.
Right, and that to me was a huge breakthrough when I learned to really shoot from an awareness standpoint.
Tell us about that. What do you mean by shooting from an awareness standpoint?
It really got interesting. You know, last time we were talking about calling your shots, and I think that calling your shots really to get to, or maybe to one of the things that'll help you get there faster, is shooting from just an awareness or open mind. The whole entire awareness thing, when I started shooting from that standpoint, and it's kind of it's difficult for you to describe it for each individual person. It may be different, but what I did is I just kind of rather than concentrating or focusing on any one thing while shooting, I just kind of opened up my vision, opened up my mind, and didn't really analyze anything that was happening at the moment that I was shooting. You just kind of shoot, and you let your mind, your vision, just kind of take it all in and see it. And then after the fact, you can kind of go back later and you know, play the tape, so to speak, of what you saw, and then start saying, okay, well, I saw this or whatever the case may be, and possibly then strive to make small tweaks or maybe try something different or whatever. But when I started shooting from an awareness standpoint, it's really weird. And I don't really know if it affects your shooting really, but I started actually seeing, you know, brass cases coming out of the gun.
Yeah. A brass hose. You've described it as
Yeah. In speed shooting before, it was really strange. It just looked like I could just see this arc of brass coming out of the gun. But really and that really doesn't do anything for your shooting, but what I did see is just the relationship of the front sight on the target, and you start seeing the timing the recoil cycle or the timing of the gun better, the sight dropping into the notch, you start developing a cadence, you know, or understanding the gun cycle, the recoil, how the gun cants, rotates, everything.
Right.
And I think, and we've talked before about, you know, where the best shooting comes from, and the best shooting comes from your subconscious mind. So I think when you shoot from an awareness standpoint, is that you're kind of opening up your vision to your subconscious and saying, this is what it looks like, and your subconscious takes it all in. And I think people don't really give the subconscious really the credit that it deserves, but that's where, you know, the best shooting comes from, and it can take all this stuff in, understand it, and then basically take control of the shooting for you. So yeah. It's kind of like you lay it all out there for the subconscious. It figures out what to do. And then when it comes to doing it, you don't have to think. It does it automatically.
Right. I call that the unconscious competent.
Right.
That's what I like to call it, because you don't even have to think about it. You just automatically do it.
And you can think about it, like, let's say, from the standpoint of throwing a baseball. I mean, if you had to think about the mechanics of what it takes to throw a baseball and what you want to do and where you want to aim and all this stuff and the arc and the distance and, you know, wind and everything.
Right.
You know, you'd never make it. But what we do is we turn the whole entire idea of throwing rocks or throwing baseballs or throwing objects or whatever over to the subconscious. And you just, you know, you look at where you want it to go and you know, the subconscious figures out where your arm needs to be, what their exact release point is. I mean, everything.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that is a good analogy. Throwing a baseball is a good analogy. Let me get your opinion on this, Steve. I underlined this sentence in the book. This is what jumped out at me. Brian says, awareness lets the shooter simply observe the constantly changing relationships between himself, the gun, and the targets. That kind of stood out at me. What does he mean by that?
Well, I think it's just basically a statement there of when you're in a fully aware standpoint like that, you're kind of seeing everything. You're not, and you're seeing everything, and you're not analyzing it. You're just kind of accepting it for what's happening at that moment, and your awareness basically allows you to see all that without really getting sidetracked by trying to analyze it at the time that it's happening.
Okay, you just said an important thing right there. I think you just said an important. So, if somebody's not shooting from awareness, are they analyzing too much?
They're probably, if they're not shooting from an awareness, they're probably shooting from a conscious point of view, which means, yes, they are analyzing what's happening or trying to predict what they want or trying to see or force a certain, you know, sight picture or whatever vision to be happening at that time. He talks a bit about, you know, conscious, classical concentration or whatever point of view of acting like a filter. And he said the filter basically takes in everything that you have seen in the past and what you predict to happen in the future or could happen in the future. And you're observing everything through that filter rather than seeing everything as it happens at that time. So the problem with that is that when you start observing things through a filter, you're really restricting what's happening or what you're seeing. You're not seeing everything basically at that time at the exact moment that you're firing or shooting the gun. And this kind of, I mean, it's really difficult to talk about this stuff because, again, it's all, you know, it's a mental aspect of your mind and what it does and doesn't do.
Yeah.
And how you can actually get, you know, put certain things, I would say, are roadblocks into your shooting performance.
Yeah, and, you know, before we go any further, I almost forgot to do something here when we opened up this interview. I would encourage anybody who's going to listen to Steve and I talk about this once a month, I would really encourage you to get this book and kind of read the chapters, you know, along with us. In other words, you get it, read chapter one, listen to this podcast. If you're listening to this first, go back and listen to it again after you've read chapter one and do that. Do you think that'd be a good idea?
Yeah, definitely, because otherwise it's just going to sound like a somewhat fragmented, disconnected conversation between the two of us. So people are going to be like, I have no clue what they're talking about.
What are these guys talking about?
Yeah.
Well, and for people who can't get the book, let's kind of try to simplify it a little bit as much as we can, though, okay?
Right, definitely.
Because there might be some people that – and I'm not a big reader. I don't like to read all that much, but I'm forcing myself to do this. Okay, let's jump to focus for a minute.
Right.
Here's something that Brian says, and this is what I find myself not doing, and I got to work on. He says, strive to shoot with a calm, relaxed body and an alert, attentive mind. Observe the shooting as it's happening.
Right.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, so that to me was also, it's really just like a calming of your mind. It's trying to, you know, you don't want really any thought process to be going through your mind at all when you're shooting. Because if you're thinking about something, that's conscious thought. And conscious thought, any shooting from a conscious state of view is going to inhibit your shooting. All best performance really comes from the subconscious. Whenever you think through anything,
Okay, hang on a second. What would be an example of a conscious thought that shooters sometimes do? What have you done sometimes when you've got some conscious thought that you shouldn't have?
Front sight. Can you give us an example? Front sight.
Oh, okay. You mean concentrating on the front sight?
Putting in your mind, look at the front sight, align my front sight, look for a perfect front sight alignment, anything like that.
Are you saying that's not a good thing?
It's not a good thing from a performance standpoint, because anything that you're doing thinking while shooting basically prevents your subconscious from performing the way it should and achieving the maximum performance. So, I mean, I realize that, you know, for some people in the very beginning, and again, what we're talking about here is really advanced shooting. It's beyond, well, they don't call it beyond fundamentals for nothing. I mean,
right.
The fundamentals are learning grip, stance, front sight alignment, and all that stuff. And we all start there. We all have to start there,
right,
on learning to shoot. But to go beyond that standpoint, you start, you know, leaving the, so to speak, the fundamentals that with the mechanics of it behind, and starting to really explore basically the higher level performance. So when you go into a stage or a shooting situation and think about what you want to do or what you want to accomplish or what you don't want to accomplish, and I'll talk about that in a second,
okay,
you are basically taking, if you want to call it a, you know, CPU cycles or power or whatever ability, you know, a way to perform. You are taking some of your, some of your ability to execute and diverting it to your conscious thought, where really you want all of your, you know, your mind power or whatever to go to subconscious shooting at that time. Another example of a conscious thought pattern, which will get you into trouble, this got me into trouble years ago, is you come into a situation with a no-shoot target, and your mind does not understand the word don't. In fact, I think I posted something about this on one of the forums. So
I think you did,
You go into the stage or whatever, and you have a no-shoot against the target, and the thing you tell yourself is, don't hit the no-shoot, don't hit the no-shoot. Well, your mind doesn't understand the word don't, so all of the thinking is no-shoot, no-shoot, no-shoot. So you just put basically a thought into your mind about no-shoots. So since you put that thought into your mind then focuses on no shoots rather than shooting.
I've done that way too many times.
Yeah. So rather than focusing on what you should be doing or giving yourself a positive thing to be in there, is basically just, you know, find the targets and shoot the targets and leave it at that.
And don't tell yourself don't hit the no shoot, because you're implanting the words no shoot into your mind, and unfortunately it's probably just going to make you gravitate towards shooting that no shoot.
So while you're shooting, all you're thinking is no shoot, no shoot, no shoot, rather than shooting. Because, I mean, in reality, that's what it comes down to, is you are shooting, that's all you need to do. I mean, it sounds simple, but that's all it is. I mean, it just comes down to shooting the gun. But when you start thinking about what you want to do, you basically take away the ability to just shoot the gun.
You know what? That's so true. And let me give you a personal example of what I've done before. I've actually done this more than once. It was an IDPA stage, and there was a target we had to engage, a no-shoot target, and then another target we had to engage on the other side of the no-shoot, and we had to be on the move. So we're going from position one to position two. While we're moving from position one to position two, we have to engage both of those targets. We have to double tap each one and don't hit the no-shoot that's in the middle, right?
Right.
What do I do? I actually burst after I'm at position number one. I fired the first couple targets at position number one. As I'm moving to position number two, what do? I shoot the stupid no shoot, and I don't even engage the two targets I was supposed to engage.
Because you're so preoccupied. I bet before you started, before the buzzer goes off, you probably put something in your mind about no shoots, danger, avoid them, something like that.
I did. And yeah, I couldn't believe it. Now, you know, I was zero down on the no shoot, but that was bad.
That's a perfect example there, is that you've gone into, you know, a stage or whatever, and you put a conscious thought in your mind. So you're thinking, rather than just shooting, you know, when the buzzer goes off, shoot the targets. That's all they are.
Yes.
But you're thinking as you're trying to execute that stage of what you either do or don't want to do. And consequently, your game plan goes to hell, and you end up hitting the target that you didn't want to hit.
Yeah.
Another example of that is, let's say you have, you know, in that same scenario or whatever, is that you have a target that's really close in front of you, and the first thing, you know, I mean, you see that target and you go, this target's so close, I can't miss it. There's no way I can miss this target. So rather than shooting the target, you just have already put this thought in your mind of, when you're shooting it, this is so close, I can't miss it, so I'm not really going to pay a whole lot of attention, and I'm going to go on to the next target. Well, surprise, surprise. I mean, I've seen people miss targets at, you know, 3 or 4 feet in front of them, because they said, and they keep on, they say, you know, how could I possibly miss that? Well, you did. And I think it comes down to that, where in their mind, they just, you know, resign themselves that this is so close, there's no way I can possibly miss it. So they don't really put their awareness into shooting the gun. They put a thought into their mind that I can't miss. And rather than shooting, they're thinking effectively.
You know, that's a great point. Let's focus in on that a minute. Because let me give you another example of what I've done. I had that same scenario where the target was like 3 or 4 feet away. And I was in a sitting position. And when the buzzer goes off, we had to shoot the first target that's 3 or 4 feet away from a sitting position, and then stand and move to the next position and shoot. So what do? I'm thinking, okay, this is so close, I can't miss. This is a piece of cake. All I got to do is point the gun, shoot. I'm going to zero this out. The first shot was great. The second shot, I must have shot it while I was trying to move too quickly, and I pulled the thing way left, and it was like three down. I thought, how in the hell did I do that? You know, it was 3 feet away, and right. I yanked that shot so far to the left.
Yeah, probably what happened there is that you're thinking that, you know, this is so close, I can't miss. So you see probably your sights on the first round that you fired, and then you probably, thinking that it's so close that you can't miss, shifted your vision or your awareness off to wherever you're going or whatever, or just completely, you know, blanked the target out and didn't see your sights on the target at all. And that's, you know, part of the problem of thinking while shooting. And really, I mean, all you need to do on shooting stages or shooting any target or whatever is just, you know, rather than thinking about what you want to do, just let your subconscious take care of it for you. It sounds really weird because it seems so contrary to what we want to do. We want to think of all this from a mechanics standpoint of, you know, if I do this, then everything will work out very well. And you don't really want to relinquish control to this part of your mind that may actually be able to shoot better than your conscious awareness. And this gets into something called, you know, the ego thing, which I think Brian talked about in here, where your ego is trying to basically take control of everything and not relinquish control to anything else.
Oh, give us an example of that.
Well, I mean, I can give you many examples of that from personal life and things like that. But what happens there is that, okay, so your ego gets into this thing, and this gets into a lot of like performance stuff where you think, you know, I want to beat somebody or I want to show somebody that I can shoot really well. So that's the ego part of your mind. Basically, you're like, I want to win this. So it will try to take control and force things to happen rather than letting your subconscious, just do what it needs to do. So an example there is, let's say that you're in the midst of a match and you're on a stage and you do one of these things where, you know, you're in a tight battle with somebody else and you want to win. Mm-hmm. But it's going through your, and the whole entire ego thing says, you know, that if I win this stage, I'll win the match or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So it gets in the way of letting the subconscious actually just shoot the stage. So it tries to control shooting the stage, and you end up usually, because of the fact that you want to, your ego wants to win or wants to show it can win, you'll end up with a miss or you'll end up with, you know, down points or whatever, rather than just shooting the stage like it's any other stage and not trying to prove a point or anything like that. You know, the ego gets in there and tries to take control. You don't want to.
Would you say that's also losing focus?
Well, okay. So we need to understand, because Brian talks about focus and he talks about concentration, and focus from Brian's definition, and I would try to say from my definition also, or at least my interpretation of it, but my understanding of it is basically a directed awareness. So a directed awareness just basically means that You don't want to get distracted by any other outside influences. You want to let the shooting happen, mm-hmm. but you don't want to set up filters or anything like that, but you want to stay, so to speak, focused on what you need to see when you're shooting and not get distracted by something that doesn't, you know, it's not going to improve the shooting or help the shooting. Concentration is putting a thought or some sort of a plan or whatever in your mind and trying to execute it. So focus is really just the ability to try and direct your awareness to what it needs to see at the time and not be distracted by anything else while you're shooting. So, you know, an example of that might be that you're shooting and let's say you're really into aviation jets or something like that. That's your hobby. And right. You're shooting, and then all of a sudden, you know, you hear a jet fighter fly over or whatever, and you're really interested in it, but, you know, your focus allows you to, you know, take that out of the picture and not let your mind get deviated by that, or worse yet, start thinking, oh, gee, that's a military jet. I wonder what kind of a jet that is, if it's an F-16 or an F-15 or what. I mean, just, you know, then the whole entire thing about shifting your thought pattern onto jets or what they look like or what they do or whatever, your focus basically just takes that sound out of the environment and keeps you focused on the targets while you're shooting them.
Ah, good point. Good point. Okay. This is good stuff. So what do you think he meant by the shooting tents?
That's really interesting. The shooting tents is what's happening right now. It means that you're not focusing on or thinking about the past, and you're not trying to predict anything that's going to happen in the future, but it's what's happening at this exact moment without analyzing it, without trying to take anything that's happened previously and applying it to what you're doing right now or what you're doing right now and how that may affect the future. So it's literally what is happening at this exact moment, and at this exact moment, after that passes, you effectively let it go, and you're still, you know, you're happening. I'm sorry, you're looking at everything that's happening at that exact moment. So that's
okay. So
that's the shooting tense to the present tense.
Would you say an example of that being, let's say, you shot a real bad stage. It was hideous. It was terrible. But now you're onto the new stage. Forget about what happened in the past, and don't worry about the next stage. Just get into the one that you're shooting now.
That is one example of that. Yeah, that's one thing that people will get hung up on is they'll have a really bad stage. And they'll be, you know, they'll carry that with them rather than just letting it go. So that a good example, that's a good point, Bob, is that you're shooting and you're thinking, boy, I really screwed that last stage up. And you're thinking of this while you're shooting rather than just letting your awareness shoot the stage for you. So again, your conscious mind is getting in there thinking about something that's happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another example of this is, let's say, during the stage, where you're shooting along and you realize maybe that you have a miss on a target. Let's make it worse. Let's say you have a miss on a target and you hit a no shoot, but you were calling your shots and at least you made it up. But now you're going along thinking, crap, I hit a no shoot. That's really going to screw things up. I'm just going to tank this stage or whatever because of that. And so now you're thinking while you're shooting. And while you're thinking, while you're shooting, you know, you have another no shoot that you end up, you know, plugging because you were thinking about the last one that you hit.
That's right.
So again, it's the shooting tense is literally what's happening now. It's letting everything, you know, in the past be in the past, and it's letting everything in the future be the future, but not trying to predict the future or anything like that. So it's literally what is happening now, trying to, you know, block out everything else that has either happened in the past or the future.
All right, so let's take a few minutes to try to tie these together. Let's try to tie awareness, focus, and shooting tense together to where it makes sense for someone that might be new to doing this.
So my take on that is awareness is basically just keeping an open mind of everything that's happening, not right. trying to evaluate it,
okay.
just accepting it for what it is, and leaving it at that. Focus is the ability to basically keep outside or other outside influences from distracting you from your awareness or deviating. That's a good transition there. Deviating into what is happening in the present tense at that moment, mm-hmm. what we were just talking about of not dwelling on something that's happened, you know, literally maybe just a second ago, but really just taking things for what are happening right now and staying aware and not letting conscious thought get into your mind at that moment.
Okay, good. That's a you tied those together nicely. I like that. Okay, here's something that I thought was interesting from this chapter. This section about the shooting tents. The little margin that he's got here. He wrote in the margin. He says, "If I took my wallet out of my pocket and threw it at your face."
Right.
You'd instantly protect yourself, catch the wallet, move your head away, whatever. You would act. Mm-hmm. After it happened, you might wonder why you acted the way you did, but the simple act, the fact that you acted, is what really matters. Through observing yourself in that simple process, you can see what we're after here. That's the tense we need to learn to shoot in. What does he mean by that?
Well, I think what he's saying there is that, you know, his example of throwing a wallet in your face or whatever, you're going to react, or you should, react to a situation like that. Is, I mean, the awareness is that all of a sudden something is coming at you, and you want to do something, and obviously it's going to be catch it. But what he's getting at here is that, from a present tense thing, is that you don't start thinking while the wall is coming at your face, I wonder why he threw it at me. Because
yeah.
That means that's putting. That,
you don't have
that's
time to
now,
think about that.
Right, right. But, well, actually, it's amazing some of the things that can go through your mind really fast while things like that happen. It's like, why did he do that?
Yeah.
But you don't want to, get, you know, distracted by that. And that gets into, again, focus of eliminating the distraction. So from the example he's giving here of somebody throwing a wallet at you and basically reacting to it is that, and it's an immediate reaction. You have a total awareness of what's going on, of what's happening at that exact moment. You need to do something. And you don't want to think about why it has happened, why the wallet's, you know, being thrown at you, nor do you want to think about, you know, the future of what, you know, what not catching it means or anything like that. It's really just reacting at the moment, at that point in time.
Oh, I just thought of something. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't be afraid to tell me if I'm all screwed up in my thinking on this. But what I just thought of is maybe that applies to a self-defense situation. All of a sudden, you know, God forbid, you find yourself being shot at. Don't sit and think, why is he doing this? Why is he shooting me? Well, oh,
right.
No, why is he shooting me? Just take care of the situation. Just fire back. Just get out of the way. Just defuse the situation. Defend yourself. Just do what you got to do. Just act.
Exactly. Do what you need to. And that's a good point. Do what you need to do at that exact moment. And that's all the awareness is required. So you don't want to think about why is this guy doing this or who's doing this, nor do you want to think about if I don't react, what's going to happen to me?
Right.
You know, I'm going to get shot.
I'm going to get shot. Yeah.
Right. Right. You just basically need to react at that moment, taking in everything that's happening at that time.
Which is a lot easier said than done. When bullets are flying at your head, it's a lot easier said than done.
You know, something I thought about before doing the podcast with you on the whole entire idea of, in terms of, to try to keep this, from a defensive standpoint, mm-hmm. of awareness versus concentration or, you know, thought, is let's say you're in a situation and you've got some what you might define as shady characters that you're around or whatever. So.
Right.
Your concentration is thinking, you know, gee, that guy's dressed like a gangbanger or, you know, whatever that, or what your stereotypical ideal of a threat might be. Okay. So all of a sudden you're putting your concentration on him, where what doesn't, you know, what you're not aware of is that's the guy who's dressed perfectly normal. Who you have ruled out because you in your mind, this is not the type of guy that would be a threat to you, turns out to be
he's
a threat to you.
Right.
Yes. Right. So from an awareness standpoint, you're taking in everything. You're analyzing, you're just basically taking everything in. You're not evaluating it. You're not characterizing anything. You're not filtering anything. You're just kind of seeing everything. And that when something does happen, you're able to react to it at that moment. So rather than, you know, focusing on this one guy that you think is, is the biggest threat to you, you're kind of just taking it all in and not analyzing anything at that time. And I think that's really a key thing, is that you want to just kind of be there with your awareness up at a heightened level, but mm-hmm. not ruling anything in or out at that time.
Very good point. Very good point. I like that. This is good stuff. You know, believe it or not, folks, we've only talked about half of what's in the first section of this
first chapter. Yeah.
But I think this is going to be enough for most everybody to digest right up to this point, and then we'll probably pull something out of chapter two for the next podcast.
You know, one thing just real quick here that Brian talked about on you know, writing the idea about mechanics versus, conscious awareness and whatnot, or a conscious, subconscious mind, is learning to ride a bicycle. And the thing is that when you learn to ride a bicycle, you learn to ride, basically you don't think through the whole entire process of learning a bike. You don't think about, how to try to manipulate your legs or your feet to pedal, and how you try to achieve balance and trying to keep the wheels moving, creating the gyroscope effect or anything like that, and stability, or what steering is. But when it comes to shooting, we all learn to shoot using basically, mechanical steps, or we take it from a mechanical standpoint. So you think about, getting sight alignment, and right. you think about pressing the trigger, and we all learn to shoot that way. But the thing is that that works well, for basic level of shooting, and for some people that may be all they need to do. But to get to the next level, you really need to shift to a subconscious standpoint of letting your mind take control of the situation for you. So where I'm going with this is that, let's say that you tried to analyze learning to ride a bike. Well, you know what's going to happen. I mean, you start, everything's going to be very choppy. You're not going to probably be able to learn the thing at all. If you start trying to think about how to ride a bike and think about steering, the idea of, okay, so when you turn a bike or a motorcycle or whatever, it's done through countersteering. And for anybody who doesn't know what countersteering is like, if you want to go to the right, you turn the wheel actually to the left. Okay.
That's correct.
So you push the right handlebar to turn the wheel to the right, or turn the wheel to the left. But that seems just totally counterintuitive of what you normally would think. You'd think, well, I want to go to the right, I want to turn the wheel to the right. Well, if you started learning a bike, or I'm sorry, learning to ride a bike, and started thinking about all this stuff, or if you thought, okay, in a panic situation, I have to think about how to turn, the wheel of which way to go to save yourself from, running off a cliff or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't do that. You let the subconscious takes care of all this stuff for you. And that's a standpoint that we need to get into with shooting also, is really letting the subconscious take care of all this stuff for you. And there's one comment in here toward the end of this chapter, you pointed out the side notes or the liner notes or whatever.
Right.
But there's a quote here from Bruce Lee, and it says, "Conscious thought is the greatest hindrance to the proper execution of all physical action."
Say that again.
Conscious thought is the greatest hindrance to the proper execution of all physical action.
Yeah, there it is. Conscious thought's the greatest hindrance to the – yeah, you're – well, I guess Bruce Lee probably knew what he was talking about there, didn't he?
I would – yeah. I think what it gets down to is, like we were talking before about throwing a baseball. If you actually had to think about all the mechanics of throwing a baseball, the release point, where your arm should be, speed, trajectory, everything – you probably would miss the catcher by a mile. I mean, it wouldn't even be close trying to throw
Good
the ball
point.
Where you want it to go.
Good
but
point.
But if you let the subconscious take control of it for you, just like you let the subconscious, learn to ride a bike for you, then you achieve the ultimate level of performance. And that's what we need to do with shooting, is to, as hard as it is, but to take the whole entire shooting aspect away from the conscious mind of thinking through everything, mm-hmm. and letting the subconscious just do it for you, and then have trust. And that's the biggest thing, is have trust in the subconscious will do it.
Trusting your subconscious, yeah.
Exactly. If you start basically shooting from an awareness standpoint, and awareness basically just lets the subconscious see everything it needs to see, and the subconscious will learn from this, and it will know what to do when you need to do it. You don't need to think through the whole entire process. It basically just takes control. You need to turn control over the subconscious and let it do it. So that's what the whole entire awareness thing is, of basically just having faith in the subconscious of doing things and opening up and just basically just letting everything come in, letting the subconscious see everything that it needs to see while shooting. It will learn everything it needs to do. And then when it comes to actually shooting, say a stage or whatever the situation may be, of having faith in the subconscious to do everything and not thinking through the process at all. You basically just want to, we've talked about this before, about going into autopilot mode. You want to just, you know, kind of reach that state where everything is done in the present tense. It's all about what's happening right now without any conscious thought getting in the way of trying to control the situation.
So for people that want to get to that subconscious level where their subconscious level is taking over their shooting and they're doing what they need to do, what does it take? Just repetition, 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 over and over and over again?
I think that does help. I mean, it can help, or it can come from live fire. I think it can also help or come from dry fire. I mean, the repetition, you know, that's one thing that dry fire is great, is, you know, repetition of either draw or reloads or you know, target acquisition.
Yeah.
Seeing the sight on the target where you want to hit the target. But yeah, repetition is part of it, but I think just while you're doing it, of not trying to consciously process anything that you're seeing, but just kind of taking it in and seeing it. And I found that, you know, a lot of times, when I go to the range or whatever, when I'm shooting, I'm just, I'm glad you brought that up. Here's a really good example of practicing or training.
Okay.
and getting distracted. A lot of people like to use a shot timer when they go to practice. And the problem is that rather than just going out and practicing and being aware, they have now injected something into their shooting that they are trying to quantifiably measure. They're trying to measure time. Well, timers are great for going out and trying different techniques and then maybe just, you know, being able to use the time to see evaluating one technique from the other. But I think where people get hung up on timers or the use of shot timers is they start focusing on time, which is something they don't have control over at all.
Right.
So they get distracted by the fact that they're trying to go faster and faster or whatever and trying to control time, that they lose basically focus on what they're really trying to do, which is shoot. So I used to actually go out and practice with a shot timer, and I'd go out there and I'd blaze away at targets, not getting very good hits in them. But my focus was trying to get, or, you know, go faster and faster and beat time, or whatever I'd previously done. And I've since, now, unless I'm trying to just, you know, test a technique or whatever, but a lot of times I'll just go out to the range, set up targets, and just shoot. And I'm just kind of like taking the whole entire thing in.
You're not using a timer at all, right?
Not using a timer at all. I can't even tell you the last time I actually pulled a timer out. Because to me, the timer, in terms of just practice or whatever, I think the thing is, and this may be me or a flaw in my shooting, but then you start trying to become too much focused on the time or how fast you are or whatever, rather than just, you know, focused or aware of what you're doing. Because all it comes down to in reality when you're shooting is, you know, putting shots on target, of seeing everything that's happening while it's happening, and just letting the subconscious do what it needs to do. And when you start injecting a timer into things, all of a sudden I think your conscious thought gets into the game, and then your ego gets into the game of trying to go faster or beat your previous time. You know, and it's all of a sudden your shift of what matters doesn't become shooting the target. Your shift of what matters is what the time is.
Yeah, so, interesting point, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that go out there and practice with shot timers.
And like I said, there is a good use and a bad use of shot timers, and a good use would
right.
be of, you know, you're transitioning from one box. Let's say you're shooting from one box to another. You know, and you're working on footwork or whatever, and you're trying to see what may work out, you know, what was better there or whatever. I'm trying to come up with just like a loose, you know, scenario. And
yeah.
you can do something and try it out and see how it works and time that, and then try to do the same and do it a few times so you have a good baseline, and then do the same thing a different way and see how that works. And that's where a good use of a timer is. But where a bad use of a timer is you're trying to, you know, try to go faster and faster and faster on your draw. You're trying to go faster and faster on your reload or whatever. You're trying to quantifiably, you know, measure that, where it's not so much of a testing technique out, but you're just trying to, you know, see how fast I can go. And all of a sudden then your focus is not on the shooting or not on your draw, but how fast you can do whatever you're trying to do.
Very interesting. That's yeah. Whew, man. This is scientific stuff here, Steve.
Yeah, it is. And it's really, it's kind of weird to just, you know, kind of let the subconscious, you know, turn the control over to it. Not to deviate here too much, but I'll just give you one quick example. Yesterday when I was at the range, I decided to, I wanted to see what my, where my sights were hitting at 30 yards. Because one of the last stages, I thought I might have been a little bit high. So I backed up 30 yards and was really trying to, and again, this is bad, but I was really focusing, or I shouldn't say focus, I was concentrating on trigger press. So I was thinking, you know, nice, clean trigger press, sights are lined on target, don't, you know, jerk the shot because I want to see where my, you know, where my group is or whatever. And I did that, and it wasn't bad, but I didn't have a really great group. So I went, backed up 30 yards again, loaded, and I'd shot like 10 rounds. Backed up, started out shooting the same way, and then started, just said, okay, forget this. My conscious, I'm sorry, my awareness is that my sights are on the target, and I'm feeling, and this is what it gets down to now, rather than thinking about trigger press, I was feeling the trigger press, and it's a subtle difference, but your awareness now is shifting to what your finger and your grip feels like. And all of a sudden, I was just like, I was breaking the shot when my mind said it was time to break the shot. And all of a sudden, instead of going from a cadence of, let's say, 2 or 3 seconds per shot, I was down to like 1 second. So it was like blam, blam, blam at 30 yards. And I went down and looked at it, and I had like about a 6-inch group, I mean, for 10 rounds with a fairly tight group on some of them, right, you know, down probably about, I don't know.
Is that right?
So, yeah. So again, there, it's really just the first example that I was giving where I was consciously trying to think about trigger press. I was thinking, you know, press the trigger, don't jerk the trigger, and break the shot. When I got into the second scenario, I basically put all of my trust in my subconscious to break the shot when it felt like it was time to break the shot, when it saw what it needed to see, when it felt the trigger the way it felt, rather than thinking about pressing the trigger, my subconscious just pressed the trigger.
Ah, okay. So in other words, at first you were thinking too much about it.
I was thinking or using the mechanics of it. So yeah, I was using the mechanics of trying to shoot as my platform for shooting, rather than just letting my subconscious do the shooting for me.
Interesting. And so your groups got better when you just let the subconscious do the shooting for you.
My group got, and I only did this, I did it twice. So my groups got better, but not only that, my cadence, because in IPSC or IDPA, everything's about time and accuracy.
Right.
So it's interesting that my accuracy improved and my time went down to do it, which seems.
And this was at a distance of 30 yards, you said?
30 yards, yeah.
Wow. Very good. Congratulations. Yeah. That's great. That's good. This is good stuff, Steve. Thanks. I just want to give everybody who's listening a little bit of a look ahead. The next time we do this in a few weeks, Chapter 2 is about the tools of shooting. And one of the things I like that Brian says in here is techniques do not make the shooter. The shooter is the technique.
Yeah, I think that's in the first page of our Chapter 2, so I haven't even gotten
first
to chapter
of Chapter 2
yet.
Two, yeah. But that is interesting. I'm just giving people a sneak preview as to what's going to happen the next time we do this, what we're going to talk about. Techniques do not make the shooter. The shooter is the technique. That's
right,
going to be an interesting read there.
I think that is basically just a kind of like a little bit what we're talking about, is that the mechanics do not make the shooter. The shooter is, you know, the platform, so to speak, or the shooter is the tool, so to speak.
Right, right. This is good stuff. I think this is a good time to bring this podcast or this interview part of this podcast to a close, and let people absorb this. May have to go back and play it more than once. In fact, I'm probably going to play this back to myself before I even post it.
And again, it's very anything having to do with the mind is you know, very difficult to understand and accept. I think that it comes down to a lot of it's just acceptance of a lot of this stuff. But I mean, just to encourage your listeners is that if they can really get down to, I mean, just go out to the range and have faith in your subconscious and just go out and shoot without trying to make anything happen. And if you get to that state and just kind of go out and experience the whole entire thing, it's an eye opener. And I hate to say that because it's a cliche, but it really is an eye opener type, you know, thing of just kind of getting into that state where none of the outside influences matter. You don't see anything. you're not thinking the process through of how to shoot. You're just kind of there experiencing it and going along for the ride. And it's really kind
you
of
see,
a strange feeling.
I think you just hit on one of my challenges there, Steve, is I'm out there trying to make it happen all the time.
Yeah, if you're trying to make it happen, that's it is one way of shooting is to trying to, you know, make it happen, but you know, giving the control over to your subconscious and having trust in it of doing what it needs to do is just a huge leap of faith for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that the water's great and jump on in.
Yeah. Come on in, the water is fine, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Good. Once again, I appreciate you coming on. Sorry I was late joining here.
No problem. Like I said, it gave me a chance to do some dry fire, so that was good.
I love it. I got to tell everybody, you know, I emailed Steve. We were supposed to do this an hour earlier, and I emailed him, and I said, hey, I got something going right now. I'm kind of busy. Can we push this back an hour? And he goes, yeah, no problem. It gives me an extra hour to dry fire practice. And I thought, I love it. You know, we're doing this on a Saturday night, and you're dry fire practicing on a Saturday night. That's great.
Yeah, do I not have a life or what? No,
it's yeah, get a life, Steve. Come on.
Yeah.
That's terrific. Thanks again. This is Steve Zofy, everybody that's been on the show with me, USPSA Master Class Shooter. And I appreciate you coming on. I'm looking forward to it. In a few weeks, we'll talk about Chapter 2, The Tools of Shooting. How's that sound?
Yeah, I'll do Chapter 2. It sounds good. I'm looking forward to doing that. Like I said, it's been a while since I've looked at this book, so it's always kind of a a refresher for me to go back over it. But there's a lot of good stuff in here. And like you said, I would encourage anybody who has the ability to do it, go out and get the book, because it really is, you hear this about a lot of stuff, but it is a, it will change your life when it comes to shooting and the way you shoot.
Yeah, even after Chapter 1, it's starting to change me. So the book is Practical Shooting, Beyond Fundamentals by Brian Enos. Thanks for coming on, Steve. Appreciate it.
Okay, till next time.
Yep, thanks.
All right, bye.